You're listening to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. This program is broadcast on 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. And you can go to that website to find out about all of the interesting things which are done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, as well as hearing archives of Humanities Connection. Disability rights. It's really the last civil rights struggle. Obviously, we continue to talk about race and many other things which are not yet settled in our country. But disabilities and the rights of people who are differently abled, that's at a much earlier stage than so many other social debates and discussions that go on in the United States right now. And the New Jersey Council for the Humanities has an action grant for the Disability and Social Justice Project. And we're going to be talking about that during this next segment of Humanities Connection. My guest is Lauren Schalisch. She is Assistant Professor of Special Education, Language and Literacy at the College of New Jersey. Lauren, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about the idea of disabilities as a civil right and that the struggle for this is still at a fairly early stage. Give us kind of a state of the struggle update here when it comes to disability rights.
Sure. So I come from a field called disability studies, which positions people with disabilities as the experts on their own lives. And so if we look historically how the kind of term or concept of disability has evolved and how it's been used, we see that in movements for racial justice, for example, that has everything to do with disability justice and disability rights. And we haven't been maybe seen at the forefront of this work in the ways that we've hoped. And so kind of looking throughout history, we see different things happening or expressions of disability being taken up, but maybe not named in that kind of way. So you'll see, for example, we have used constructs of behavior or intelligence to diminish opportunities for other minoritized groups throughout history. So indigenous populations. We said women were biologically inferior. We had psychiatric categories to label slaves that ran away from their owner. We used the term drapetomania, that it was this psychological impairment. We considered being gay a disability until 1973.
So basically the commonality here is if somebody's different, there's something wrong with them. That was what society said.
Yeah, and we've pathologized different, right? We've given medical meaning to understanding ways that people are just inherently different. So the disability rights movement is about understanding that more deeply and being led by people who've been labeled as disabled.
When you're talking about what you're doing, though, through your action grant from the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, you're talking a lot about children in school, pretty much in the K through 12 area, because of the fact that they've been labeled over the year troublemakers for pretty much the exact same reasons that you were just explaining in your last answer. Talk about what you're doing specifically.
Sure. So we decided to use the action grant as a way to kind of enter into these conversations, but to use this construct of behavior as a way to magnify really complicated things that were going on in our schools. And a lot of times we can see, in our schools that we conflate students who have different expressions of their bodies or behavior or speech or language as having, we conflate that or confuse it with having diminished intelligence or lack of theory of mind, things like that, when really it's just a matter of difference and needing to create opportunities for that expression, for opportunities to be seen and to be leaders and to be really understood. And so the way that we took this up in a K-12 setting is to use this term of troublemaker that we learned a lot about from a recently published book by Dr. Carla Shalaby with that title, Troublemakers, as a way to understand portraits of children and how they have been labeled as troublemakers, but actually how their behavior is a form of communication. It's displaying an unmet need. And what can we learn from just viewing or understanding children differently in that way.
Can you give me a specific example of this, Lauren? What would be a behavior which may be misunderstood, thought to be disruptive, or thought to be, you know, the mark of a troublemaker, that actually turns out to be a form of human communication? Give me an example.
Sure. So I'll use two examples here. One could be speaking out of turn in class. A lot of times we have certain notions about how students should participate, when they should speak, what they should look like when they speak. And so sometimes kids might get excited or burst out of their chair or, you know, be really eager to participate or to learn or might talk with a peer during that learning process. Often that's seen as being disruptive or maybe defiant or not paying attention or the student can't control themselves. When really, if we kind of reframe how we view that expression, it is a display of learning, of intellect. And in many cases, like Dr. Shalaby says in her book, a lot of that peer relationship building that students try to do is often misread as not paying attention when students are actually doing the work of trying to create community in their classrooms.
So what does a teacher then do to recognize that this is not bad behavior, for lack of a better term, but is a different form of communication? How does the teacher adjust, allow that student to express herself, and then also still continue to serve the rest of the class, which may express themselves either differently or in what we would consider to be a more standardized vehicle or medium for communication?
Sure. So I will say, you know, research has kind of shown us that in inclusive environments where students with disabilities are present, where different cultural and racial groups and ethnic minorities are present, that all students do better. When you, specifically in the field of special education, when you plan for and include students with disabilities, the academic performance of all students increases because you're providing more opportunity. More opportunity for choice, differentiation in how students might learn. So I'd say, you know, for teachers, the easiest thing that we can do is to provide choices or options for how students want to learn and also for how they want to display their learning or act out their learning. So a lot of times as educators, we might feel confined by how students express themselves or opportunities that we give them to express themselves. And we, you know, only view valuable participation as sitting still and making eye contact and only speaking at certain times. But how do we kind of open up our classroom communities to not say students have to be silent and that they only talk with the teacher and that they can't move their bodies? How do we create classrooms where students can incorporate movement and be leaders and be peer supports for other students in their classroom? So offering those opportunities for choice, for expression, can help us to all do better in a learning environment.
We'll talk a little bit in a couple of minutes about where this project is going and what your future goals are. But I do want to speak in the past tense for a couple of minutes here. We're doing this initially for the March 2018 episode of Humanities Connection, but I understand that in February you had an event in which you had major keynote speakers and you had breakout sessions and talked about community organizing and coalition building. So tell the audience a little bit about what you accomplished back in February.
Of course. So we had an event here on the TCNJ campus where we brought students from Trenton Central High School, and they were given the opportunity to engage with other TCNJ students and faculty and local and national disability rights advocates. And so this was an extension of our work that we had done in the high school over the month of January. The program kind of contained a number of different opportunities for people to engage with each other and really sustained opportunities for dialogue about these topics and with people who identify as disabled. So our overall goal was long-term sustained dialogue across difference. And so what participants were able to do, we had a keynote address by Lydia Brown, who identifies as a queer autistic person of color. They talked about thinking about disability justice in liberation work. We had a offering for different breakout sessions on the topics of restorative justice and inclusion as dissent and the impact of standards-based reforms on marginalized youth. So people could select a topic that might be meaningful to them and, again, engage with other disability rights activists in the area. And then we came back together for a community organizing and coalition building workshop so people could take what they learned and become involved in the local community around an issue of disability justice or disability liberation within other civil rights struggles. So our goal was never to kind of isolate disability or think of it narrowly or as a contained concept, but to understand it as a relational one, one that has everything to do with racial justice and gender equity, and to think about these ideas and movements as broadly as possible so we could be inclusive.
My guest is Dr. Lauren Schalisch, and we're talking about the Disability and Social Justice Project here on Humanities Connection, which is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Now, we talked about what you've done. Let's talk about what you are going to be doing. Your goal, from the literature which you sent to me, has to do with long-term coalition building. With whom are you building these coalitions? Are you talking about K through 12 districts throughout New Jersey? Are you talking about higher education? Who are going to be some of the partners in terms of long-term coalition building when it comes to disability and social justice?
Sure. So the simple answer to that is yes. We are seeking to create bridges and opportunities for dialogue between K-12 and higher education. A lot of the work that we did with the high school students was built around a college apprenticeship model with the idea that we could learn about these issues of equity and social justice in that planning. An important piece of our planning was also the inclusion of local and national disability rights advocates. So our goal for this, with the support of the Action Grant, and the way that, you know, our student colleagues have described this in their planning, is that a lot of this work is just the beginning. We didn't view the event on February 23rd as the capstone or, you know, the last piece to this work, but as a way to begin it together and to decide how we want to move forward. And so our long-term goal is to continue this collaboration in the K-12 setting alongside local and national disability rights advocates and to create those bridges to higher ed that are inclusive and representative for everybody. So maybe we could think more deeply about issues of access and equity for post-secondary education that represent and reflect people with disabilities.
We're doing the initial broadcast in March, but this program is likely to be repeated later in the year if somebody's hearing this in the summer, for example. What might be to be a way for them to get in touch with you, even though you know, you've already had your Campus Institute event, so that they could take advantage of some of the programs that you have in terms of disability and social justice?
Sure. Probably the easiest way to do that, we have a website thanks to the support of the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Our URL is www.weknowfreedom.com, and this was adapted from Carla Shalaby's book, Troublemakers, which is a project about teaching love and learning freedom in schools. And so that was the platform that the students decided to use going forward as a way, because we're geographically positioned in different places in the area, it would serve as a home base for us to dialogue and to post resources and other learning materials that both K-12 educators and higher ed faculty and staff could take advantage of.
We only have 30 seconds left in this segment, Lauren, but if you can just tell those of us who may not be aware of disability as a civil rights struggle, what we might be able to do just in our lives or our awareness, something very general.
So I would say the easiest way to learn more about this is to become engaged with people who identify as disabled. The field of disability studies and critical disability studies views people with disabilities as experts on their own lives, and they're not often given the platform or the position to be in that, you know, to create that those opportunities for decision-making and organizing. And so our goal really with this project is to listen more deeply, to dialogue more deeply, to engage more deeply, and understand what the experiences are like for people who are labeled or identify as disabled.
Thank you very much, Lauren Challis, talking about disability and social justice. That's it for this episode of Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. Thank you very much for listening. This program is initially broadcast on WFDU 89.1 FM, and then it's archived at www.njhumanities.org. You can go to that website not only to hear archives of our program, but to hear about all of the fascinating programs that are being run throughout the state by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.